Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to Beyond the Game. My name is Gregan, and today I'm going to be chatting with Scott Smajer, also known as Smajer, or dang, that's a long name.
And I suddenly went from getting so much praise over the last year and a bit, and then suddenly that just flipped on its head, and I became Twitter's most hated man of the month.
You hit a million at the end of 2020, right?
Yeah, pandemic. I kind of, it just sort of was like another tick for the box, and then it was just like, okay, what else is life going to bring? We'll see what happens.
What would you say the single greatest thing to happen off the back of being a big content creator is? You mentioned a few things there, like the modeling, hosting a big show.
I don't think I'm unattractive, but I'm not like what you imagine for a model. So when I got the email of like, hey, do you want to come to this? I was like, huh?
What would you say if you're going to give one piece of advice or many pieces of advice to the new Minecraft generation of creators to make sure that they do it right and don't mess up? What would you say to them?
Going into it with the want and desire to be famous and to make the money is such a hard mindset because it's such a difficult thing to achieve. And it will only lead to you being upset and disappointed in yourself when a lot of it is out of your control.
Make sure to follow for future episodes and let us know who you want to hear from next. I don't know if you've noticed, but we've upgraded all the tech slowly throughout the episode so far. And I think we're at a sweet spot now where the audio is the best we can make it. So let us know what you want to see improved in terms of the background, the cameras, whatever it is. We're always trying to improve this podcast to be the best one in gaming. Without further ado, let's get to know Scott Beyond the Game. Welcome, Scott.
Hello.
It's good to have you here. I am excited to talk about all sorts of different things because it's not just going to be the typical I met you through Among Us route. It's not going to be the typical let's find out about you with content creation, but we have the whole Minecraft world to talk about, which I think this is the first time I'm going to be deep diving into the Minecraft world on this podcast.
It's going to be a journey that I'm not sure you're ready for, but we'll take it.
For the next hour and a half, let's talk about Minecraft and everything about it. But you are a content creator now, over a million subscribers. You also stream on Twitch. You got many different avenues that you do outside of your content creation projects, like the MCC and Minecraft Championship. But let's sort of get you to define what would you say your first thing is. If someone say, "Oh, what do you do?" What would be the first thing that comes to your mind?
I normally say content creation, but like I'm a YouTuber first has always been the thing. So like I have a lot of friends who Twitch is their main thing and they wouldn't consider themselves content creators. They consider themselves streamers. Whereas I'm like, no, YouTube is like my main thing. So it'd be content creator slash YouTuber.
And you do organize the MC Championship. That's probably what the most people will have known you for or seen the impact of, I guess, because MC Championship, one of the biggest events in gaming, being the massive Minecraft event every month. How did that start?
So it was a weird story where it was June of 2019 and I was doing like Twitch's like front page Pride Month thing. So like I had like inflated views because it was on front page. And then Keemstar, of all people, not a great person, but came into my chat and was like, do you want to play my Minecraft tournament? And I was like, huh? I was like, sure. He's like, okay, if you kill 5 creepers in 10 minutes, because you didn't know anything about Minecraft. I don't know if this was meant to be a hard challenge. He's like, you can be in it. And I was like, okay. And then he just left and then came back like 10 minutes later. I was like, did you do it? And we were like, yes. And he's like, okay, you're in. And I was like, cool. So that was how I got into Minecraft Mondays, which was an awful event. I remember we used to, at the end of every event, he made us post our stats from the stream into the Discord or into the Twitch DM or Twitter DM, so that every, like, if you didn't hit the minimum view through count, he kicked you out. So everyone, it was also just like putting your view stats in and around everyone else was really weird. But that was how that happened, and basically did MC Mondays for a while and was like, he's not a nice person and these events are kind of rubbish. But me and my friend Tiff, who was also in it, were kind of talking. We were like, I like the whole, like, bring 40 people together and, like, playing an event together in the same night, like, but just not with him. So we were like, maybe we could try and figure out how to do that ourselves. Like, we have the connection. So I then sort of was like, okay, I'll ask about, I know this person, Noxite, who runs Nox Crew, that I'd met earlier that summer. I was like, I'll ask him if he knows anyone. Because I knew they did Bedrock maps at the time, but they weren't doing like game show or anything at this point. So I was like, hey, do you know anyone we're wanting like do this event kind of thing? And Stefan was instantly just like, us, we're doing it. You're not allowed to go anywhere else. No, it's Kerr going to do this thing. And I was like, okay. And then that was probably in about August, September. And then in November, we ran the first MCC. So my job is to make sure people show up and his job is to make sure the games exist.
Well, the games that they play, obviously you said about the game show being...
Or just repurposed game show games.
And so I was with the Nox crew, and this was one of the first things we spoke about when we first met. We were playing Among Us, and when we were both dead, I was like, hey, Scott, I don't know if you know this, but I used to be a builder in the Nox crew. My job was to make the maps as functionally fun as possible in the game show. I wasn't that artistic with my design, but I was very good with the feel and how it played out and everything. And so I used to be involved in, I think it was around the 6th, game show, I think it was the one where we had Captain Sparkles.
Yeah.
That was around the time where that was my first one. And then after that, we did the whole like game show for the community and everything like that. So we had an inbuilt MCC ready to go.
Yeah.
So when you went to Noxite, did you think that he was going to repurpose the game show at the time?
Honestly, like, it's funny because Noxite game show was a little bit before my time. So I didn't remember that the Noxite game show existed before I went to Stefan. The reason I even went to Stefan was I had met him that summer at E3 with my friend Shelby. We ended up all three of us going to lunch and we got on very well. And I was like, you do Minecraft stuff. Like, maybe you know a team that do events. Like, that was kind of my reasoning for going to Stefan. I'd forgot that they did the Nox Crew game show completely. And obviously it then just worked out. I think they'd been, obviously Nox Crew game show is what they used to do. And then they'd been doing Bedrock for so long. And I think they were kind of missing that passion project. So when MCC came, it was like, wait a minute, this is us going back to our roots, let's do it.
Yeah, and the thing about it as well is after game show, we tried repurposing it in so many different ways. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about this because at the time we weren't even a business, you know, like we were doing it as a passion project, we're doing it for fun. Now they're a business where they've got NDAs and stuff. But we had ideas like doing a Takeshi's Castle style thing.
Yep.
We'd get 100 members of the community to all enter and then see if they could beat the Nox Crew game show kind of thing, and like repurposing maps in that. And then, you know, the game show maps that have now been repurposed into MCC, some of those were changed quite a bit. Some of them barely changed at all. I mean, the Decision Dome, that's been part of the Nox Crew game show since the beginning of
it's the like first a lot of the show. Hole in the wall was basically just take, it's a lot of it was taking the old games and then updated for what you can do with Minecraft now, but also then just to fit a 40 player like stream environment kind of thing. It was always a fun or a learning process for us when we first started, where the team would come up with like these really cool game design ideas and they'd be really happy with it. And then I'd have to come in and be like, that's really cool. Doesn't work when you're live though. Like the thing is, like example, it used to be Sands of Time, which I know was a repurposed old game where you'd like stopped a nuclear reactor going off or something. Mm-hmm. That was
The original Sands of Time was similar to the current one, but it wasn't randomly generated. Yeah. And then they did a sequel to it, which was Meltdown, was the generator one.
I remember the Meltdown was sort of what they were drawing inspo from when we were doing the Sands of Time for MCC, because I remember watching the trailers and that in the meetings. But I remember at the time, like, Isaac, the game, like, design lead, was then like, people don't need to stand in the middle room for, like, the sand timer. Like, it's not the most efficient way to do it. And I had to be like, it might not be, but streamers are not going to risk being locked in a dungeon for 10 minutes while they're live. So they're always going to leave someone in the room. So we need to think of things for people to do in the room. Like, that was sort of the learning curve. I think we've hit a good spot now where, like, my involvement sort of took a back step after, like, MCC 14 because people got annoyed or felt it was unfair with how much, like, knowledge I had. So my involvement of understanding the games is sort of like, I give the feedback or the idea of how it's going to go, or I'm like, this is how it should work, or this is an idea that I had. And then I don't know anything about it until I get the update video script like 2 days before we posted it. And I'm like, okay, so this is what we've actually done. Like, it's very pulled back from that. But it was, I think we got to a good spot where the team started to understand, like, they can now kind of have more fun with MCC Island, like the public server, of like, okay, Island is where we can have more RNG and fun stuff because it's not a tournament. And then for the stream event, it kind of has to be a bit more like streamlined in certain places for streaming. So
yeah, it's crazy when you look back at like the Nox crew as a whole and what they had there ready to go. Mm-hmm. And then how you guys were able to come in at the right time and be like, this is what we want to do.
Yep.
Create a centerpiece for all of these content creators to work together. And it almost has a similar effect of what Among Us had of that cross-pollination of communities. Yep. Where you're getting people who've never interacted with each other before who are getting a chance to do that through the different teams. What's it like for you finding, because you put the teams together.
Yeah.
You have to talk with YouTubers, which is not the easiest thing to do in the world. They're quite hard to get a hold of sometimes.
Yeah.
And you have to build these teams out and then also announce it to the public and deal with the public's view on these things. What's that whole experience like?
It's changed a lot over time. I remember the first few MCCs back in the day, like trying to get 40 people to show up for another Minecraft tournament. Like back into 2019, there was Minecraft tournaments out the wazoo. Like there was all over the place. There was Minecraft Bundies. Then to compete with them, Minecraft Saturdays started. Because the very first MCC was actually on a Sunday because we didn't want to fight MC Saturdays for like their players. So we're like, we'll just do it the Sunday. And then Minecraft Saturdays ended. So then when it came to the next year, we were like, okay, we take the Saturdays back. But it used to be me like struggling to get people to show up. I had to end up reaching out to like my Twitch manager. I remember right at the start being like, I need help. Like, do you have anyone? So then they went and got a bunch of people. And then I would always have, like, without a doubt, there'd be like 2 to 4 people would drop out like the day of the event. So I was like, I needed 40 people and then I needed backups. And it's funny because there's a lot of people who are now like MCC regulars, like Sylvie, who only was in MCC because someone dropped out on the day of the event and I needed 2 spots. And I invited Krineos, who was one of her backups, and then asked if he had a friend. And he was like, oh, I can bring my friend Sylvie. I was like, great, bring them in, we're going. Like, and that was how like a couple of people got into the event was back then I needed it. Whereas now I have people who are be on the wait list for like a year and a half, because I just don't have the space to let them in. Because it's just got more popular and people aren't really dropping out. So it used to be my sign up form maybe had like 40 people, 44. And now it's like 80 people sign up. And I'm like, oh no, I need to bench half of you. God, oh, this will be fun. I think as it's also got more popular and it's more sought after, it's been, people are more responsive to me. I know YouTubers are normally notoriously bad at responding to things, but I think with the way MCC is and how passionate people are and how much they want to play, when they see a DM from me pop up, they tend to be pretty quick on responses, which is nice now. I think people have like found a nice level of respect, which I appreciate because they appreciate the time I put into it. But yeah, making the teams has only gotten weirder. I used to like the whole point of MCC was to, I always liked imagining it like the Smash Bros of Minecraft, where you bring in like some Hermitcraft people and some Empires and some Dream SMP, and you sort of bring them and mesh them into a team that the audience are like, I never would have seen Green with Wilbur Soot, like, what? This is a weird combo. And I enjoyed that because it was like bringing in these people who didn't normally interact together. But obviously that then over time, you get some creators who don't want to expand outside their circle. So then when they sign up, like, oh, I'll only play with people I know. And then you have audiences who maybe love one creator but hate another one. But then if they end up putting together, it causes like fights between fandoms of like, wow, why is this person here? So it's also for a while, the people that would be mad at stuff like that thought I just did everything. Like, I think they thought I ran the show myself, which, so I just get blamed for game decisions or Like, I was like, I pick who plays. That's where I check out. Like, I have to make sure people show up, and I have to deal with the, like, talking to the creators and reaching out. But outside of that, that's my jurisdiction. Like, blame Noxite. Go for one of them. But yeah, it's been, like, I think we've gotten to a lot better place where I also don't care anymore about, like, internet opinions. I've kind of, I get, like, I posted the teams into the Discord for the new MCC that's coming up. And I had, like, five different people, like, text or message me, like, teams are really good, like, this, I'm so excited. And I was like, that's all I need. I was like, as long as the players are happy, that's fine. Like, I want my players to be happy so they will make entertaining content. And that's the most important part for MCC. So,
yeah, we'll get onto the opinions of the internet a bit later on. Yeah. But I want to rewind and go back to early Scott and how young Scott living in Scotland managed to get to the current Smager, dang, that's a long name, who's making Minecraft content, who's doing the MCC stuff. Where did it all begin?
For me, it started way back when I was in, like, high school. And I remember, to me, YouTube at the time was, like, cat videos and music videos. Like, that was it. And I remember my sister coming in and being like, oh, I found these, like, vloggers, which is really funny because it's two people who I'm now, like, best friends with, like, Joey Graceffa and Strawberry 17. And she came in and was like, oh, there's these people, like, they do, like, vlog things of their life. And I was like, that's weird. I was like, why would you do that? Like, YouTube's for cat videos and music stuff. Like, why are people doing that? And I was like, okay. And then I, like, looked more and I found people that did gaming. And I ended up finding my friend Lizzie at the time, who was doing Minecraft stuff. And I was like, this is cool. Like, I'm into this. And at the time, I was like, I talk a lot anyway. That was going up through school. That was always the parent evening comment of, like, Scott's lovely, super polite, works hard. He does talk quite a lot and distracts people. So I was like, I already do that, like, figured out how to download, like, OBS, and I had a computer anyway, and sort of, like, started making a couple Minecraft videos. And then what would end up happening was, like, I would start YouTube, do it for a month or two, wouldn't get anywhere, because obviously growing a channel out of nowhere, especially back then, and also when you have really bad setup, not great. And then I'd give up for about 6 months, and then the bug to make videos again or to try again would kick in. But I would forget the password and email for the account. So then I'd just make a new one and start again. And I did that, like, 3 times before my current one. So there's, like, 3 channels of mine that are really old that exist on the internet that I can't delete. But I just don't ever tell anyone the names for, because I'm like, no one needs to find that. But then obviously it was the Dang It's a Long Name one was the one that stuck. And I remember, it was like Lizzie at the time had said, like, she'd done, like, a video or something, that someone's like, how do you come up with the channel name? And her thing was like, you want to make sure that it is easy to remember, doesn't have any, like, complex, like, numbers or underscores or X's, like, that sort of thing, because those are hard to sort of remember. It needs to be, like, easy enough to spell. So I remember going through being like, okay, well, I've used all my usual ones, like, I can't do S major and all that sort of stuff. So I was like, what do I do? And I originally, it was going to be Damn That's a Long Name. And then my brain was like, some people think damn's a swear. So I was like, dang, that's a long name. I was like, that's funny. I like that. Turns out it was a hit with parents. Anytime a parent finds out that's the name, they laugh about it. Or whenever I need to give my email for, like, adult things, like insurance or buying a sofa, whenever, like, what's your email? And I have to spell it out. They, like, chuckle to themselves. Like, the boomers love it. It's great. But that was kind of where that started, and the channel kind of began as, like, not vlogs, but, like, more camera, me, Sam, and S doing, like, a skit or talking about something, and then pivoted back into Minecraft, and then doing, like, back then it was, like, Gary's Mod with my friends Lizzie and that, and then Sims, and over time, at one point I did Gacha videos, was one of the reaction to sort of stuff, and then Minecraft, and then Among Us, which is then where I met you, and then back to Minecraft. But Minecraft's kind of been the staple one that I've always kind of stuck to or had on in the background with other stuff.
So I guess Dang That's a Long Name was the first big content explosion for you. Mm-hmm. And then you streaming as Smager. And yep. Like when we met in Among Us, you were Smager there. Mm-hmm. I found it hard the other way around to find your YouTube channel because I was like, oh, so let's search Smager. And then it didn't come up. I was like, what's going on here? So what I want to know, is there a difference beyond just the name between Smager, Dang That's a Long Name, and even you, Scott, outside of content?
It's funny because, like, so the whole reason I have all of that is, like, at the time I had Ace Major 1985 on like Twitter and Instagram and Twitch, but I'd already used that on YouTube as one of the old channels, so I couldn't have it when I made the Dance Volume channel, so I did that. But then Twitter and Twitch, all that, there was like a character limit, and Dang That Song name didn't fit. YouTube was the only one that let me have it.
The irony.
So, yeah. So I used to then, like, my whole thing is, like, I'm a branding nightmare, is the whole, like, joke kind of thing. And for ages, I was basically just Dang That Song name or Scott. And then Twitch, when it started doing well, and it then became S Major or S Major, and then my friend Tubble called me Scott's Major at one point, and that then just stuck. So it just became Scott's Major was how most people know me now. And that kind of like, I'd say the different, at the time it was like, I'm a branding nightmare. This makes it difficult for like business cards. Cause it's like YouTube is this one, Twitch is this one. And then Instagram and Twitter are this one. Cause they're all different, but it's actually worked out quite well in that I often have people be like, I didn't realize you had a Twitch account. Like I've watched your YouTube videos for years, or I didn't realize you did YouTube because I only know S Major. But there's been a couple times over the last like year or two where I've become like Twitter's hated man of the month, which almost contains itself within like Twitter and Twitch. It never made it over to YouTube because the people who hated me or didn't like me didn't know that I was Dang That Song name because I don't really do face cam on there much. So then like that kind of just left unscathed, and I was like, I actually enjoy this. It's great. I can kind of have that separation. And I would say YouTube is the most PG version of me. And then Twitch is, I'd say YouTube's like PG-13, Twitch is like PG-15, 13. And then like real life, I can just be unfiltered and say what I want kind of thing. So I'd say that's like the, YouTube is the most refined version of me or edited. Twitch is a bit more casual and people get to know me a bit better. And then obviously outside of content, I'm even more chill, like it's more relaxed kind of version. So it's like the different tiers, which I actually, in hindsight, enjoy having, being able to kind of separate it that way.
Yeah, it's interesting. Is there any difference in personality? You mentioned about the PG-ness, but do you notice you act differently in each of them?
I would say YouTube, like when my brain's in YouTube mode, I tend to not swear at all. There's occasional slip-ups or whatever, but like that's just I don't tend to swear a lot anyway. And then Twitch, I'm a bit more free with it. I don't have to think or curate myself as much. And I also make a lot more like innuendos and adult jokes. A bit more
cheeky.
Yeah, like a little bit more tongue-in-cheek, kind of flirty, like that sort of thing to wind up my friends and do all that sort of stuff. And then obviously in person, you just be yourself. You don't need to worry about it. It's kind of like how you have the person you are when you're in friends versus the person you are around your parents. Like it's that kind of separation of like YouTube is my parents one and then Twitch is my friends. Like,
Yeah, it's interesting because I always find that the more time goes on, the more I recognize the difference between Mike and Gregan.
Yep.
And I'm interested to know how many other people have that. And your case being one where you've got almost two online personalities and the real life personality. I was wondering if there was any differences there.
I'd say, as I said, over time, I've maybe blurred the lines a bit more because I've started, it almost worked out quite well. Whereas when YouTube, I remember a couple of years ago, had this thing where it was like, kids content is no longer monetized. And also most of the people I was friends with were making like Minecraft content, which everyone was freaking out like, oh God, is YouTube going to consider my content for kids? And I remember having a call with my manager and he was like, you're fine. He's like, we have you marked down as basically like PG-13. He's like, with the innuendos you make and the occasional jokes, he's like, you don't need to worry about that. I was like,
yeah,
kill.
Like, I got a bit confused by that for the when I first got back into YouTube because I don't swear at all.
Yep.
My content is aimed for adults because it's quite theoretical Rocket League stuff. But I clicked the made for kids thinking, oh yeah, it's fine. You know, anyone could watch this and there's no swear words or anything like that. And then it was like, this is not what you want to do. No. This is like baby shark videos and stuff like
My manager described it as made for kids is like Dora the Explorer, where like it's content that is designed for kids, but the other side is like Great British Bake Off. Kids could watch that, but it's not made for kids. So that's where it was like, I make Great British Bake Off style content where like kids could watch my videos, as quite often they do, but I'm not being like, how do you spell this? Like, can you say this? Like, I don't play into that sort of stuff.
So with the Minecraft being your main content focus, and we mentioned Among Us, I'm interested to know what your top five games in your journey to where you are now is. You can use games that are important to your career. You could use games that are ones that you particularly enjoyed. But what do you reckon your top five games of all time are?
I would say I probably have three games that sort of have defined my career. And I have two games that have sort of been, that I go back to as like me games. Career-wise, it's obviously number one is Minecraft. It's the one I've done for the longest. I played back when it was an alpha. Like, I've kind of been playing it for the longest period of time. Then Among Us, which was sort of like the blow-up I had during the pandemic, which led me to meeting so many people that I never would have. It's like yourself outside of the Minecraft sphere. And it ended up being really good timing for MCC at the time, because it suddenly meant I had... like I was friends and followed with like Pokimane or Valkyrie or Disguised Toes, where I could be like, hey, do you want to play in this Minecraft tournament? And they're like, sure. Like, it was sort of expanded that. And then the other one was Sims, which was one I kind of grew up playing and sort of dabbled in content over time. And again, it's funny, like the whole meme that like Twitter and the internet have about me is that like, there isn't an SMP I'm not part of or connected to in some way. Like, an SMP will be announced and then I am there, like that sort of thing. But even to the point where I have a lot of friends who are Simmers because I used to do Sims content, and then they see me pop up in like the Simmers channel and they're like, huh, how is he here now as well? Like, what, how, we can't escape him. So Sims would probably be the last one for that. And then personally, I like having certain games that like I don't attach to work. So for me, that's World of Warcraft or League of Legends are the two kind of games I always fall back to. Because I always used to get this thing called like what I called gamer guilt, where like I'd be playing a game for fun and then I'd feel guilty about it because my brain is like, I could be streaming this or I could be recording this, like I could be making this into content. And eventually, like, World of Warcraft and League have very specific audiences, like you need to be into those two games to want to watch that content. So I was like, right, I'm going to stick to everything else's work slash like I enjoy the games, I enjoy Among Us and I enjoy Minecraft, but World of Warcraft and League of Legends became my, like, these are what I play and I could just have downtime. I don't need to think about it. I can play games with friends. I can play it myself. And I have those for me and then the other three for work.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, a lot of big games there. You've chosen games I think a lot of people will know about.
Yep.
And I think also the Minecraft thing, I think there's a lot of people who Minecraft would be in their top five games, even if they didn't make content out of it, just because of how versatile it is. You mentioned you've been on so many different SMPs, the multiplayer servers, like you can experience a whole different game in every single one of them. You know, you can do role play, you can play like what Nox Crew do, you can play
mini games or PvP games.
So the options are endless. Now the interesting thing for me is how different WoW and League of Legends are. They're very, I'd say, hardcore games. I think you could, if you ask someone what three games would you think of for hardcore games, I think both of those would be up there in most people's top. What is it about those games that you enjoy?
I think for me, I'm a big lore person. Like, I enjoy story and animation is the other thing. And both League of Legends and World of Warcraft have always been really good for like cinematic animations, like when new games come out or that sort of stuff. And I studied 3D computer animation at university. So like, that was stuff that always kind of stuck out to me. And I'd say both of those, even though like League of Legends, the lore doesn't affect the actual gameplay, it's still like the character designs and all that are really cool and thought out, and I enjoy that sort of stuff. I think for me, World of Warcraft was one I got into when I was like 12. I remember getting the battle chest thing for my birthday, and my parents were quite strict of like, if a game has an age limit, you're not allowed to play it until you're that age. So I remember for my 12th birthday, I got the World of Warcraft battle thing because I just kept seeing the box of the dwarf and the griffin and being like, I want to play that. And mom's like, you're not 12 yet, you can't do it. So that was sort of where I've kind of stuck to with WoW. I'm a big multiplayer game person as well. I tend to lose interest in single player stuff. So obviously World of Warcraft, I like the fact that as I'm running around, I'm like, that's another person also sat at a computer playing the game at the same time somewhere else in the world, and that's cool to me. And in League of Legends, it was the same thing. If it was like me and four other people are playing against five other people that are also sat doing the exact same thing as me, and like, that's cool. And it's why I like Minecraft SMPs is what I tend to do rather than single player stuff. Or Among Us, it was like 10 of us on a call or 15 of us like playing a game at the same time. So I think that's why I like having those kind of games that are mine that come from like a fantasy enjoyment, and then obviously just got into the mechanics of it.
Yeah, I guess the multiplayer side of things, it's something that definitely our generation got introduced to halfway through our gaming journeys, you know, when we were in our early teens.
Yeah,
it was eye-opening of this idea that we could connect and play with other people. I grew up with a brother, so I always played multiplayer games with mm-hmm. him or against him.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've always enjoyed multiplayer games too. I guess the final question around your gaming mm-hmm. life growing up, what would you say your greatest ever gaming achievement is?
I mean, I think like the obvious answer would be like, oh, my YouTube subscription thing. Like, I think, fun enough, it was probably actually from last year at TwitchCon. I took part in like the Twitch Rivals at San Diego. It was like MCL. So it was basically Minecraft MOBA was how it was described. So it was like League of Legends meets Minecraft, like that sort of thing. And I got asked if I wanted to do it, and I said yes. And they were like, great, you're a captain, you can pick your team. So I was like, cool. So I went and asked my friend Jojo, who's really good at the game, and asked my friend Fruitberries, who's really good at the game. And then I also brought in my friend CPK and my friend Owen. And I was like, great, do you all want to, you're all coming to San Diego, do you want to do this tournament thing? And everyone was like, yeah, let's do it. So we ended up going to the thing. It was like there was four teams, so you played like, it was a knockout kind of elimination. If you lost the first one, you would then be playing for third. So we did it, and like we won the first round, and then we lost the second round, and then we won the third round, so we made it through. And it was us versus this other team that had won both their rounds like instantly, like they rolled through them. So we were like, okay, we're playing for second here, like we'll do our best. And we just adapted better as a team. Like we kind of like figured it out and knew how to pick changes or characters in a way that countered them quicker than they could adapt. And it got down to like best of three, we both won first rounds. And it was like the last kind of thing where like our dragon, which was the thing you had to kill, was open and theirs was open. And it was sort of this like really intense last minute, like Fruitberries managed to get in and like took it out. And we're like, oh my God, this is insane. What the heck? Like playing up this big storm kind of thing. And like it was winning that on stage while it was live. And we all got the trophies and we all got to stand there. So I just have this big trophy in the background of my office, which I'd say is probably my like top gaming moment from... Just getting to win something like that with my friends was fun.
Yeah, I think winning in gaming is one of the most fun experiences I had in my life. Like,
yep.
Obviously with esports, I've experienced it as a coach in that mm-hmm. way. But Twitch Rivals, I had a Rocket League Twitch Rivals, which I won, and that was an amazing experience. I think that's one of the beauties of Twitch Rivals is you get people who don't normally get a chance to compete yep. in gaming, to compete in a game that is more balanced in the sense that it's not a competitive game, or if it is, they have rules around you only allowed this many people at this rank, this many pros, whatever it is. So yeah, good work Twitch Rivals
yeah.
for creating special memories for all of us.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good sort of entry point for people who don't normally do competitive games to like get a little taste of it. So
also I do want to move on now and talk a little bit about what you mentioned earlier on, which okay. is the hardcore fan base of the Minecraft community, the stans.
Yeah.
I've been on the receiving end, not directly, but indirectly, by going to a party, which was perfectly legal.
Bowling gate?
The bowling party. I was at that bowling party, but obviously I was not directly attacked because I was not a Minecraft content creator, but there was a lot of people at that party who were. And so I've seen the wrath of the Minecraft stans. You get a lot of it through MCC. Mm-hmm. MCC gets a lot of it through... I remember there was like an artwork of one of the team graphics that got a lot of problems. You know, all these like really silly,
it's
little
really
things.
Stupid things. Yeah.
You mentioned that you've learned to ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me about when you couldn't ignore it well and how that made you feel.
I think like right at the very start, so like MCC kind of ran from 1 through up to MCC 14, sort of perfectly. Like there was a couple tech issues here and there, and MCC at the start was always for fun. Like the teams used to be like, there was maybe three to four teams who had a chance of winning and the rest were there just for fun. And from about MCC 7 onwards, it started getting more and more competitive. And that was due to like the people we brought in started being like a bit more like, not that it's a negative thing, but more tryharding and wanting to win. It suddenly pivoted the general environment for MCC. So a lot of the people who used to play for fun started wanting to improve and get better, and it suddenly like became, okay, this is more competitive now. And MCC 14 was the start of MCC season 2, so we'd just come back after the break and it was like, great, we had all these new maps, we had all these things. And I remember it was one where my team won, and one of the games that we'd played, it was this new Ace Race map, and I had played it once as I had every game for the last 13 MCCs, because I would normally take part in one test like the week before the event to make sure that I'm like does this work for streaming? And never had an issue with it before, until this one, where I obviously then knew where I was going. So people were following me, and I at one point got out of sight of the person who was in second, and everyone else was just behind them, and they took a wrong turn and ended up in a loop, like the cycle that like reset them back. And it meant I finished and everyone else struggled for ages, and it caused this uproar. And then like we obviously, that one game wouldn't have changed the winners, like we won every other game to make it there, but ended up getting down to us versus a team who had a couple of like the creators who tend to have like that stan kind of audience, and we ended up rolling them in dodgeballs. We won all three rounds really quick, and that then upset the audience and also the creator. The creator ended up spending time on live like rewatching my team's VODs and like saying how we were cheating and all this sort of stuff while still being live to their audience. It just like fueled that kind of hate. And I suddenly went from getting so much praise over the last year and a bit, which was also like pandemic time. So you weren't like, normally you kind of get that like reinvigoration when you go to events and you meet people like meet and greets or that. And they're like, oh my goodness, I love your content and really helped me through this hard time. And it's sort of like, okay, what I'm doing is worth it. And that was kind of what I'd been getting from Twitter for the last year and a bit because it was a pandemic. And then suddenly that just flipped on its head and I became Twitter's most hated man of the month. And like people were then like digging up tweets that had no negative connotations and like twisting them in ways that made them have like, they were like, oh my goodness, he meant this. And it's like, I said I had this for lunch and you're saying this is a racist statement? Like, huh? Like they would really find ways to nitpick. And from there, there was nothing I could do on Twitter that was right. Like we then did a Pride Month event with YouTube. So normally I pick who's in MCC, but with this one, because it was partnered with YouTube, they had to stream on YouTube and YouTube invited a bunch of people. And I remember at the time people were like, wow, there's a Pride event and only one quarter, one third of the event are LGBT. And it's like, yes, because YouTube invited most of the people. I filled slots. YouTube invited everyone. Or it was like, wow, Scott hates lesbians because there's no lesbians in it. And I was like, we asked about four of who identify as lesbians and they all said no. Like, what do you want from me? And I think it sort of like, it ended up putting me in like quite a dark spot where like, I was just getting like, I couldn't do anything.
Sorry. You're right.
I couldn't do anything without like it being a something brought up or hated kind of thing. And it ended up, I remember like my lowest kind of point, like it was really getting to me and it was like making me lose motivation for work. And it was just like making me really anxious and all that sort of stuff. And again, it was actually one of those things where it was quite lucky where my YouTube was kind of separate, where like, I didn't actually, I had negative comments on like Instagram and TikTok and Twitter. Not as much on Twitch, like people don't like calling you out when you can react to it in person. Because for me, if someone comes into my chat as being an idiot, I will just blast them in front of my chat. Like they can't hide behind their keyboard as much there. But YouTube obviously was fine. No one really leaked into that. But I remember my turning point for it where I was like, I'm putting too much like weight into this. Was the year before my gran had passed away. And I was obviously really upset this time. We were really close. But I remember being like, my mental health is worse now from the hate I'm getting on Minecraft than I was from losing a family member. And I was like, it was a block game that I won, that I organized, that has no prize money. And I was like, you can all just fuck off. I don't care. Like, I was like, you're a bunch of children who I could not care less about at this point. And I think like, I ended up kind of, it's the thing that like a lot of people say, where like Twitter isn't real. Like you can, when you're not looking at it, it doesn't exist. Like I can walk around and go for coffee or a shop and my server isn't spitting in my drink because I cheated in a Minecraft game. Like I've not done, like there are certain people who I think need, like should be deplatformed and cancelled because if they're like racist or they're homophobic or like they're horrible people, like I'm like, yeah, great. Like we shouldn't promote that. But I was like, I cheated in a block game. It's like, huh? Like, this isn't right. And I ended up deleting Twitter from my phone. I think it was like October that year. And I didn't reinstall it until like September the next year. And it just fully changed my mental space. Like, I also changed all my notifications. So I only see stuff if it's people that like I already follow and things like that. And it just sort of made a much healthier headspace for me. But that took a long time, several months of being like, woe is me. This is awful. I can't do anything right. Before I eventually was like, no, I need to flick this kind of switch.
Yeah, I guess you've almost got to experience it before you can learn how to deal with it. Because yeah. I was going through Towards the end of last year, I was starting to get quite agitated by individual comments from people I didn't know.
Yeah.
You know, on a much smaller scale to what you were dealing with, you were dealing with thousands of comments all resonating with the same message of you're an evil person for cheating in a Minecraft tournament. And I think that can feel a lot more overwhelming because it feels like there's a lot of people against you.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like I would read a comment in my Twitch stream, or I'd read a reply to something, or I'd read a Reddit message or whatever it was. And it would all hit me so hard. And I actually remember there was one time where I was going to go out on camera, where I was on the desk for an event where I was having quite a lot of comments about me being at that event.
Yeah.
I don't want to go into too much detail about it, but I was reading the comments beforehand and I was literally like on the cusp of crying in the green room.
Yeah.
And Cole, who's one of my best mates, came up to me and went, look, they don't know why you're doing this. They don't know who you are. They don't know what you believe in. They are just sad and frustrated at home and doing these comments. You're fine. You got this. And I remember just being like, right, just put on a brave face. And I did that whole like, for the audio listeners, not really very useful, but like the whole like hand in front of the face, like faking it kind of thing, where I was like sadness and then just smiling afterwards. And I had to do that to go on camera, but it doesn't just go away. You can't just read a comment, get affected by it and move on. You have to build up the tolerance over time, which is what you said, or learn ways to deal with it, which is like delete the app, turn off notifications, block people, all that kind of stuff. But it does affect people pretty badly. And like, I'm feeling it on a smaller scale and I'm trying to learn how to deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was interested to hear how you had with a massive scale situation like that. So now when something like that happens...
To be fair, the thing, like, it was one of my friends, Wilbur, I remember saying to me, and like, this was, I kept being like, oh, this sort of stuff. And like, I went through a horrible phase of like, I would even check my indirects, which you should never do on Twitter. But I used to do it because I'd be like, oh, no one's tweeted anything bad about me indirectly in 5 days. So like, I've got a break, and then something would come again, it would spiral. And it was that sort of thing where it was like, me searching the indirects was only going to end with me being upset, because I would see nothing and be like neutral, and then see something I didn't like and it'd be sad. And it was like, I'm never seeing this and being happy. Like, why am I doing this? And it was my friend Wilbur was kind of like, they only do it because they know you're seeing it. They know you're getting a reaction. He was like, people get mad at me all the time. And he's like, but I don't use Twitter, so I don't see it. So then they give up. And it's that sort of like, when they realize they're just shouting at a wall, they stop. And that was why I ended up deleting the app kind of thing. It sort of became like, I only check Twitter from on my computer. I set notifications so that like, I'm only seeing notifications if it's people that I already follow that like things or reply. And I like wouldn't check quote retweets is the main thing. Like, don't check quote retweets. Those are the worst. But that sort of thing is like where I kind of realized like, oh yeah, as soon as people realize they aren't getting to you, they get bored of it. Because that's where I think a lot of the hate on the internet, especially back when I was getting it, was boredom, because people weren't able to go out. People weren't able to interact with their friends. People weren't at school. And it was that sort of thing where I was like, people have too much free time that they can sit and be this investing mad over a Minecraft tournament that's ran for free and has no money. Like, okay, you're going to be disinvested. Like, people are dying. Like, there are people in the world who are dying. Use your energy into that. Like, channel that anger to people who are being screwed over or don't have rights. Like, do that sort of thing. Not a block game. Like, pick your battles. This shouldn't be one of them. And I think when I realized that, of like, oh, okay, well, if I just don't give them any acknowledgement or they don't know that it's getting to me, which obviously it stopped because you aren't paying attention, they get bored.
Yeah, I think it's also the thing I always told my players was when they were doing well in tournaments, if you're going to let the praise affect you positively as much as it is right now, you know, people that after they've won a tournament, they'll go onto Reddit, they'll go on Twitter, they'll check everything. Like if you win a MCC, if you go on socials and you've done really well, everyone's like, oh, Scott was amazing in this one. The way he played dodgeball was amazing. If you go through that and you're like, oh, this feels great. Then the moment there's a negative, it's going to also feel bad.
Bad.
So you almost have to learn to ignore everything, because if you're reading the positive as a positive and then ignoring the negative, you're essentially tricking your brain into a false reality whereby you're letting the opinions of people you don't know only affect you in the positive, and you'll get caught off guard eventually when you read something and think, oh, I thought they liked me.
It also, I think, depends on the type of person you are. Like, I'm very much a positive reinforcement teaches me things. Like, I know a lot of people, like one of my friends, Joel, I remember for a while, you were just saying Reddit. I remember for MCC Reddit, it was a lot of things were like, oh yeah, Joel's not that good. Like, he just plays for fun and like, that's fine. And Joel was like, screw you, I'm going to get good, and like got really, really well, good at the game, and like is one of the top players in MCC now. But he's the type of person who does well with that kind of like negative, like he has that, I'm going to out of spite prove you wrong type of motivations. Whereas I don't have that. I'm like, oh, you think I can't do it? Okay, I won't then. Mm-hmm. Like, I need someone to be like, this is doing really well. This thing you're doing is really good. And I'm like, okay, thanks. I can keep doing it. So yeah. I think obviously different strokes for different folks kind of thing, where like some people it works better. But I think, yeah, for mental stability, just try and avoid it. Like at the end of the day, these people don't know who you are. Mm. They're just somewhere at home, like typing a computer. And as long as your friends and family still like you and get on with you, that's all that matters.
Yeah, it's a tough old space out there, but you do definitely learn how to deal with it. And one other thing, I'm interested to hear how you reacted to it, because it's something I've heard affect people very differently, and it's something they build themselves up to, and they love the idea of it's going to happen, and when it get there, it doesn't feel the same. And that's reaching 1 million subscribers. So you hit 1 million at the end of 2020, right? Yeah,
pandemic.
And I saw you made a post. Yes, mm-hmm. I've hit 1 million, which you have to. Everyone does that. How did you frame that target in your mind? And how did it make you feel when you hit it and that short period afterwards, where I've heard a lot of people feel empty after that, where they're like, now what do I do? So how did 1 million subscribers feel to you?
It's funny because I remember hitting it. I was on Discord with my friend Lizzie, and we were like just sat on a call being like, okay, it's happening now. Like we were watching it on like Social Blade kind of thing. And it was just the two of us kind of thing. And we were like watching. And then as like, literally I hit it, was like, yeah, great. Okay, I'm going to go to bed. Like, but I remember hitting it and then being like, because I recorded it at the time and I posted that with the like the tweet. And I was like, okay, now what do I do? Liz's like, you retire. And I was like, great. Like, okay, I'm off. I think it was one of those things where I've never been, I don't know what the word is. Like, I've never aspired to be like, oh, I need 10 million now. Like my brain was like 1 mil, get the plaque, done. Like that's it kind of thing. Like I'm now in the big leagues. I've hit it, which there's so many people nowadays with over 1 million subs that like back when I was wanting it, it was such a small number. And now there's so many offers. But I never really had the like, oh, this is it kind of thing. I think because I had like MCC to kind of like also be working on and doing stuff with, and like, I'm also still making different content. And like, again, I think 2020 was my Among Us time. So then it was like moving back to Minecraft and all this sort of stuff. So I never really had the, oh, well, what's the point anymore kind of thing. I've always been quite lucky in that as time has gone on, I've always had like different opportunities that I never would have thought would happen that then did. So like 2019, I hosted Minecon for like live in Nashville. And I remember being like, that isn't something I ever thought I would do. And then last year, I was one of the models for the Lacoste Minecraft thing. And I was like, that isn't something I thought I would do. And it's sort of stuff I think, like, as I kind of, it just sort of was like another tick for the box. And then it was just like, okay, what else is life going to bring? We'll see what happens. So I never had a, oh my God, what do I do now? I've hit it kind of thing. It was just a, okay, that's cool. I've hit it. Now I don't need to, I don't have the, oh, I need to hit this kind of motivation. It's now just, a, I'm just, it's obviously what I'm doing is working. I'm just going to keep doing it and hope for the best.
What would you say the single greatest thing to happen off the back of being a big content creator is? You mentioned a few things there, like the modeling, hosting a big show, you know, the benefits of having a big channel and yeah. the events you get to be a part of. What is the one biggest thing that comes to your mind when...
Honestly, probably the modeling. It wasn't something I ever thought I would ever do. Like, I don't think I'm unattractive, but I'm not like what you imagine for a model. So when I got the email of like, hey, do you want to come to this? I was like, huh? I was like, me? Like, what? Okay, sure. Like, it was a fun, and also my friend, like one of my best friends, Shelby, was also doing it. So it was like really cool to get to, she also hosted Minecon. It's quite funny where like a lot of our big moments we've got to do together, which has been really nice of like getting to share this really cool experience that neither of us thought would ever happen, but getting to do it together was a fun thing. But I think probably that was the most memorable, and it was the most left field, like I never thought of myself as going to be a model for things, like, so that was a cool like checkbox of like, oh yeah, I got to be in an ad that was all over like New York and Paris and London, where it was like my face of me modeling these clothes. Like, that was cool.
That's pretty crazy. I mean, what can come out of being a big content creator, especially in the Minecraft space, mm-hmm. how quickly it can happen, is pretty special. And I guess that's where I want to ask you, you've mentioned to me before the reason why MCC was such a perfect role for you in terms of bringing people together was you were in that middle generation between the early OG Minecraft content creators, and you've also now connected with the new ones. You kind of grew between them. So you've seen the old, you know the new. What would you say, if you're going to give one piece of advice or many pieces of advice to the new Minecraft generation of creators to make sure that they do it right and don't mess up, what would you say to them?
I think, like, for me, the reason you should do content creation is because it's something you enjoy. It's such a hard job to do, and there's no guarantee with it. Like, I think a lot of jobs, it's like, okay, you can go to uni, get a degree, get an entry-level job and work your way up. Whereas it's like, I know people who make really good content who can't afford to do this as a real full-time job because they just it's a lot of luck. And I think going into it with the want and desire to be famous and to make the money is such a hard mindset because it's such a difficult thing to achieve, and it will only lead to you being upset and disappointed in yourself when a lot of it is out of your control. So I think putting less pressure on yourself and more focus on doing it because it's something you enjoy doing, I would say, is one. And I think the other thing is, like, there is a lot, especially nowadays, it's a lot harder for the younger people because if they blow up quick, especially today, they are under such a big lens. Like, back when I was, my trajectory for my YouTube thing has always been very, like, slow and steady, and I'll kind of go up a bit, or I'll have, like, a little spike, and then I plateau at a new kind of high, and then it goes up a little bit, and it sort of has just done this over different series or games. Whereas nowadays, a lot of people, sort of like a lot of my friends, like Rambu or Amy or Tubbo, sort of just went right like this and then plummet. And again, the other thing is, like, the plummet wasn't because of them. It was just they blew up in the time where Minecraft and content was at its peak, to then people now have gone back to work, people have gone to school, people have grown up, and Minecraft itself in general has dropped. So suddenly they've dropped, and it's, again, that sort of, like, they think it's a them thing. And it's like, no, this YouTube and content creation is a roller coaster of ups and downs. It will always be like that. But I think they have it a lot harder because they're also under a magnifying glass from this audience who will scrutinize every single thing. Like, so many of the older creators made mistakes or said things that at the time were fine, whereas now it's not. I say fine, like, was socially acceptable at the time, whereas now it isn't. And I think, obviously, back then, the internet was a lot more forgiving and also a lot quicker to forget. Whereas nowadays, it's sort of like, you said this thing when you were 15. And, like, I'm a totally different person when I'm 27 to when I was even, like, 22, let alone when I was 15. Like, there's so much, it's a lot harder, I think, nowadays for them to kind of, like, adapt and make mistakes. I don't think the internet's as forgiving for people making mistakes anymore. So I think just learning to do it for the right reasons and focus on yourself and trying to ignore what the internet thinks of you is probably the best advice I could give. And, like, do it because you want to, not because you want something from it.
Yeah, because I guess we're in a generation now where fame comes with a barrierless entry to your fans, where historically, if you were famous, you wouldn't be able to interact directly with your fans, except for in that environment where you'd be walking by them, take a quick picture, do an autograph. I guess even not even pictures back then. A lot of the time, there wasn't even cameras available on a phone. Whereas now, even if you're in public, they could be filming you.
Yep.
They could be looking at you. You know, you can't leave your house. Like, think of all the times back when we were growing up, and you'd see in the newspaper or whatever, there'd be a picture of someone on their way out of their hotel or whatever, wearing, like, tracksuits and a cap and glasses on to try and hide that it's them. Now, if a content creator walks out the house, they could get recognized anywhere. So they have to constantly be on, ready. They can't have bad days. You can't miss a stream because someone will remember that and tell you off for not being there for them.
I think it's also one of those things, like, the difference between, like, what you would have with, like, normal mainstream celebrities is what you said, is, like, I think there's almost an area of, like, untouchableness of, like, a celebrity where, like, they are, at the end of the day, obviously everyone's a person, but, like, you have this sort of, like, oh, they're on this pedestal and they're up there. And I think almost, like, when you are a fan or if you're someone, that's kind of a healthy balance to have, in a different set of, like, this is someone I don't know, but I enjoy them, like, that kind of thing. Whereas content creation blurs the lines with that, where, like, people, builds up parasocial relationships. You're like, oh, I know this person. It's like, no, you know what the content creator puts out there. You know what the content creator allows you to see, but you don't know them and they don't know you. And I think that's always a dangerous and blurry line where people then get like, oh yeah, I'm friends with this person. It's like, no, you subscribe to them on Twitch and you're in their chat a lot and they recognize you, but you know what they're like on Twitch. You don't know what they do when they're at home with their friends or when they're out and about. Like, it's that sort of blurred lines. And I think that's partially why like content creation shot into fame, because it was like almost more approachable celebrity status where people were like, oh my goodness, I really like them. I think one of the differences between a lot of times when you hear someone talk about a content creator, they're like, oh yeah, I can imagine we could be friends. Like, that's, you sort of see them and you're like, we could be friends. Like, I've had it before with, I said, it's funny, obviously, when I talk about it, because my friend Lizzie, I started as a viewer and now she's my best friend, but I started off as being like, oh, I like her content. And it was that sort of, I think we would be friends, which turns out I was right. But it's the way you go about it and obviously how it's done, whether it crosses that line of like parasocial and creepy or like nice. But it's such a messy and delicate line to balance.
I guess that kind of happens in celebrity culture too. You know, two actors you've never met before,
yep,
they could both parasocially love each other's work, and yep, then one day they meet and they get on really well. And it's, yep, that same idea that when you work in the same space, there is a chance you will meet, whether, yep, it's at events, whether it was because of Among Us back when we had, yep, that, and that kind of crossover. So it is a weird one, because at what point, you know, like for example, Harry, who's my producer, he was someone who was a viewer at first. There's all sorts of other stages to it. And I had to navigate around that, what I thought was a parasocial relationship, but it was actually very much a, we are on level playing field relationship. Yeah. And it was one day when it was like the third time in a row I'd asked, Harry, do you want to go for a coffee? And I went, he's not a viewer, he's a friend.
Yeah. You know?
And having to build up that mindset of, everyone in my chat is a viewer. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I'm not friends with them. They are just a viewer. Create, yeah, that barrier. You create that barrier for long enough where sometimes you meet people who you are friends with in your community, like I said, with my, I now live,
yeah,
with.
Yeah.
And for that longest time, I had convinced myself that I was not their friend, and actually we were friends. And that's the tough bit in this whole space, mm-hmm, because navigating friendships and parasocial relationships is quite tricky.
I think also within this space, it's such a blurred line of like, if you work in a normal like 9-to-5 office job, you have your work life and your work friends and people you meet through work, and then you have your actual friends and family. And I think with content creation, it's such a weird line, because it's like, I only make content with people I'm friends with, which means I only work with my friends, which adds a whole other environment to it. And again, it's like the same as like, I think you can start, like, it's again, it's that sort of like, the longer you know someone, the more you get to know them. I think it helps when they're around your age and you get on similar interests. Like, I have a lot of my Twitch mods who started out as viewers, and then like the way I do modding on Twitch is very different for a lot of people. I've realized a lot of people, it's like, we make applications and you sign up, whereas I suddenly will just be like, I need a mod and I've seen your name several times, so congrats, here's the gauntlet, and I throw them in the ring.
Mm-hmm. You seem mature.
Yeah, I'm like, I like you and you've not annoyed me for the last 8 months, have mod abilities, good luck, like feed them to the wolves. And a lot of those people that like I've now known for years, and like at events I'll meet them and we go out for a drink or a coffee, or like, and I'm like, yeah, they're my mods, but they're also like now my friends. But again, that's something like built up over a long period of time. Like, I think one of my mods like did their resub recently where it was like 50 something months, and I was like, oh god, we're both so old, you've been here for so long. Like, but again, it's that sort of like, it's such a, what's the word, like gray area. There's no through line of like, this is the right answer, that's the wrong answer. It's sort of a, each situation is different. Like, I got on really well with Lizzie and we became best friends, yet there's people who she was also like viewers off that aren't her friends, because it never kind of crossed that way. It's just sort of a case by case basis. But
it's also with the way people grow, you know, mm-hmm, you could be in someone's stream when they had 20 viewers,
yeah,
and they treat you like a best friend, because when you've only got 20 viewers, you do give a lot of time to every, yeah, one of your viewers. Once they get to 2000, you might still feel like you're one of those 20 viewers in the way you act. But actually, at that point, you know, it's, yep, it's changed. And it is a weird one. I can completely empathize with everyone who is struggling with parasocial relationships online.
Yep.
We're very blessed whereby we're in a position where a lot of situations, we probably act very similarly to the people who are viewers and parasocially in that position where they feel connected with someone more than they are.
Yeah.
But we're very fortunate in that position whereby we can often break that barrier down because we do go to an event or we do meet them in a Among Us lobby or in a Discord that we're in or whatever it is. So I do completely empathize with people on that situation. It's not an easy one to navigate. And I think as time goes on, hopefully we'll get better or we'll face a new challenge with the online world because everything seems to be changing so fast. It's
always changing, which is fun.
So with online and everything like that, you've mentioned all the different challenges you've faced. Mm-hmm. But I think the hardest thing with being online is switching off from online.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that you were talking about earlier on, and I thought it was so beautiful the way you described it, is your Friday routine. You have a little Friday routine. Do you want to tell me a bit more about that?
I think for like when you do content creation, it's very hard to get into a routine. I think there's a couple of people I know who have it, but like it's this balance of like one of my friends, Callum, he basically treats it like a 9-to-5 where he's like, oh yeah, I work from this time and I end at this time. And we're like, you have one of the jobs that's the most flexible in the world and you've decided to turn it into a 9-to-5. Like, why? But I think, and I always describe it as like content creation is always working and never working. Like that's the kind of line of like, if I don't want to work, like today when I came to see you, I was like, okay, I'm just not going to stream tonight. I was able to do that. But it does then mean that like my brain's like, okay, well, I need to make up for it by streaming in these days or do this work in advance. Or like I had to get the video that's going up tonight done before today so that I could come here. So for me, I ended up, my Fridays turned into a little routine where I get up in the morning, get ready. I tend to like put on my little outfit where I pick a little outfit. I'm like, okay, I look nice today. And then I go to therapy. And then on the way back from therapy, because where I park my car is near my best friend Owen's. So I tend to, on the way back from therapy, I'll stop in at like a little sandwich shop, get us both a sandwich, stop at a different place and get coffee, and then go to his and have lunch with him on the Friday after therapy, chat about things. And then I go home and then get on with the rest of my evening or my day. But like, that's my one day of the week where I'm like, I've got my little routine. If I do this and it follows that sort of stuff through, and it's like, it kind of helps round off my week. So Fridays are now like one of my favorite days, because I'm like, this is fun. I get to talk about my feelings, get a really nice sandwich, and get to spend time with my best friend. This is great. Like, that's my little routine that I have at the moment.
So you go to therapy every week?
Yep.
When did you start therapy?
I started therapy last November, I think it was. It was one of those things where like I'd ummed and awed for years being like, oh, I should go to therapy. And then at the back of my head, I was like, I don't have like childhood trauma where I was like, oh, I grew up and this thing happened and I need to talk about, like, I always felt kind of a weird one to be like, yeah, I'm going to go to therapy to talk about my problems. But I think I ended up November last year, I ended up deciding like, no, like I was going through a weird mental space and I was like, you know what, I'm going to go like find someone. And it was actually really nice because I have a lot of like, I have a really good social circle and I have a lot of friends who I can lean on and such. That's never something I've struggled with. But there also becomes a point where it's like you feel bad for like trauma dumping on your friends or like saying like, hey, these are all the issues I have. So having a professional who is then able to actually give their professional advice and also will question my things. Like I think with friends, it's good for like listening, but it's hard for them to then be able to try and offer solutions or things, because then it's like, oh, well, you're going like in that emotional state, you are a bit more sensitive. Whereas like when it's a professional who has studied for this and understands these situations and is obviously worked with people who have had similar things, they're able to kind of like call you out on your issues a bit more and be like, but why do you do that? Or why do you think this? Which is like always a fun thing to unpack. For me, we found out I just don't get angry. We don't know why. Something we'll unpack in therapy, but I just don't get mad, which is a fun thing to try and figure out. But it's always a good, I recommend therapy. Obviously, it's one of those things where I'm like, some people can't afford it and it's an expensive thing to try and do, but I think it's always something that even if you think you don't need it, it's maybe worth going to for a couple of times just to sort of see what's there.
Yeah, it's something I've considered for a while, especially through tougher times, but realistically it shouldn't be a reaction to a tougher time. It should be something that's there for when the tougher times come.
Yeah, like my mental space is way better now than it was last year, but I'm like, no, I like therapy. I'm going to keep going. And it's funny because there's sometimes I go in and they'll be like, so how was your week? And I was like, great. I was like, not a single thing happened this week that we can talk about. And like, well, then he'll be like, what about this thing in your childhood? I was like, nope, that was fine. And like, we can have unpack it from there. But then there's sometimes where it's like, God, this thing happened on like Monday or Tuesday. And I'm like, I need Friday to come because I need to be able to talk about this and like get it out. Mm. So it definitely is better to kind of have that routine of knowing that like you've got an outlet for that sort of stuff. rather than, as you said, just reactionary to like, uh-oh, bad time, I should go to therapy. It's always good to have.
Yeah, we spoke a bit about therapy on the 9th podcast we had with Stumpy. And he has a different therapy style to a lot of people. He goes on a walk with someone and just gets that fresh air in the forest walk experience whilst also talking to a therapist. So there is loads of different types of therapy out there. I think that's the hardest thing coming into it for a lot of new people is which therapy do I go for? Because there's so many different styles. There's different specialities and everything like that. But everyone I've spoken to who has therapy sings its praises, which makes sense because it is such an important part of our lives. And I guess one of the biggest things is making sure that you do have that support circle around you, even without therapy, because it's all well and good relying on your therapist, but you need to have friends and family who you can still lean on. And I think for me, I'm very lucky that my mum's very good for that kind of stuff. So whenever I'm struggling, she's always there. I wish I could help her more with her struggles, but I'm not a very good therapist for my mum, unfortunately. But yeah, having that kind of support is key. And I think every time I hear it, I'm closer to getting it. And I think that's the big thing now is people are much more willing to talk about it like it's a normal thing. Like it was a bit taboo.
I think it was funny because I remember telling... I don't know if I'm going to tell my family that I go to therapy. Like that was a sort of weird one. I was like, I don't know if I will. Because obviously, if a parent hears that you've gone to therapy, they're then like, was it something I did? Like that sort of thing. Like it, at least like that's a lot for my dynamic. It's that sort of thing. And I remember like eventually being like, my parents were down or my mum was down with my sister and my niece when I would have had therapy. So I was like, I have therapy I need to go to. And I told my sister and she was like, oh, okay. Is it online? And I was like, no, it's in person. She's like, okay, cool. And that was kind of where it left. Whereas my mum, I was like, oh yeah, I've got therapy. And she's like, physical therapy? And I was like, no, mental therapy. And she's like, for what? And I was like, for my mental health. Like, and it's a generational thing. Like my parents are a bit older, so it wasn't something they ever did. It was sort of like your issues and feelings were kept to you and your household. Like you dealt with it internally, you didn't tell anyone. So it was like a weird thing for her, I think, to kind of wrap her head around of like, why are you going to this thing? Like, why would you do that? Whereas obviously my sister, who's 4 years older than me, so still the same generation, was like, oh yeah, no, that makes sense. Like she doesn't go to it, but she's like, yeah, that makes sense to do. But it was just a funny little like differentiation. But I think you're right in that most people nowadays are a lot more open about it and a lot more comfortable talking about it. And I think people are getting more comfortable asking for help, which I think is important.
Yeah. And I think the interesting one for you as well is you were speaking to me a bit before about how when you moved down to Brighton, you were in quite a like socially active house with a lot of people around you, and you've recognized you're quite introverted, but you do need that social time. So you kind of built your lifestyle around what is good for your social and mental health. How did you kind of come to terms and understand your own social needs and mental health needs?
I think for me, like through the pandemic, I lived alone. Like I had my own house. I lived with me and my cat that I just got just at the start of the pandemic. So it was just us.
Good timing.
Yep. Perfect timing. And it ended up like I was totally fine through the pandemic. I think because we almost supplemented socializing with like online stuff. So like we were doing streams of Among Us with 10 people, 5 hours a day. Like you were doing stuff like that. And I was totally fine. And I was always quite like, I always described myself as introvert pretending to be an extrovert, where I would be out and about at events, socializing, having fun. Everyone's like, oh my goodness, he chats away and like this sort of stuff. But then I would need to, as soon as I'd get back to my hotel room, I'd shut the door and be like, okay, I just need no one to talk to me. And like, after I'd come back from an event, I'd be like, no one messaged me for a week. I need to just sit and exist myself. And I then obviously, after the pandemic, was kind of like, I need a change. Like I lived up in Sheffield, I was like, I need a change. I went down to visit Brighton with some friends in the summer and like fell in love with it. And I had a lot more friends down there. So I was kind of like, you know what? I'm going to move to Brighton. So I did in October, I think it was 2021. And I ended up moving in with my friend Jack. And we kind of had like the bigger house. So then everyone started coming over more and socializing and all this sort of stuff. And that sort of, I think, pivoted my brain a little bit. But even then, to be fair, I was still like, people would be like, hey, do you want to go out? And I'd be like, no, thanks. Like, I was quite happy to be like, I'm okay with myself. And then in 2022, in May, I had a tonsillectomy surgery, which meant I couldn't talk or eat for, it was about like 18 days. I think it was 18, 20 days, where like I was just in constant pain, couldn't work, couldn't stream, couldn't focus on anything, like TV was boring, all this sort of stuff. And my housemate at the time was then in America for a work thing. So for I had one friend stay with me for like 4 days at the start, which a tonsillectomy surgery is a weird one because normally the pain starts at its worst and it gets better as the days go on. Whereas with that one, the first 4 days were fine or okay. And then day five through about 11 to 12 were awful, like worst pain I've ever had. And I just had to sit alone in the house. Like you're basically just waiting for time to pass between getting different painkillers and all this sort of stuff. And that then kind of like was almost like the closest to like isolation I've had. Whereas like, I hate this. I hate being alone and I don't enjoy this sort of thing. And then since then I've sort of like my brain changed in a way where it's like, I need to see different people at least like 3 times a week. Otherwise I get upset now. Like I need to have friend time. Otherwise I get upset. Like whether it's like us just sitting in a call playing a game at night or going down to like the movie, or I said, I have the Friday thing with Owen where it's like, I see him for an hour. And it like, and to be fair, there's even times where if he's busy that day, I'll sometimes just give him the sandwich. We'll chat at the door for a few minutes and go. But even that is enough for my brain to be like, okay, I've seen someone. Like, so that was where I sort of pivoted or changed to like, oh no, I now actually would say I'm more extroverted, where like I need that socializing to fill my battery. And then once that battery's full, I'm okay being alone for a while. It sort of like changed the other way.
Yeah, I think a lot of people start to redesign their social life around mm-hmm. the post-lockdown yep. period, because it made a lot of people more comfortable spending time alone. I think it also made people realize who they wanted to spend time with and all that kind of stuff. So it was interesting to hear your experience with it, especially moving to a whole new city and learning very quickly like what you needed in mm-hmm. that place. So I think a lot of people are still coming to terms with their mental health, still coming to terms with their social, I guess like activity style.
Yeah.
I'm very similar to you where I'm pretty introverted, but you know, I do like going out and socializing. And that's quite nice with this flat, living mm-hmm. with Harry, living in a place where people can come to visit often. Yeah. I do think it's something we're more aware of now than ever before. Like when growing up, I didn't even think about this kind of stuff. I don't think yeah. it was a conversation you ever had of like, whether you were
introverted or extroverted. I think because growing up, you were like, one of the things I realized when I left school was it was like, I was friends with these people because I seen them 5 days a week. Like you didn't have to plan socializing growing up because you just did it when you were at school. Like you didn't need to worry about hanging out at night because you spent all day 6 hours with your friends. Even though it was like doing stuff, you were still with them. So I think, yeah, you don't really think about being introverted or extroverted until you become an adult. And suddenly the only time you see people is if you make the effort to see them. Like you don't have that, especially with what we do. I think obviously, if you work a normal 9-to-5 where you go into an office, you kind of have that socializing during those hours each day. Whereas obviously with what we do, it's like the only time you're socializing is if one of the parties makes the effort to be like, hey, do you want to see a movie or do you want to grab dinner? If you don't do that, nothing happens.
Mm. Well, thank you for sharing all that. I think I don't actually know because time has flown so fast. I think we're well and truly done. Running out of time. Yeah. Because you shared so much of your experiences and to be honest, I've learned a lot listening to you speak. And that's one of my favorite things about this podcast is speaking to people within the space and learning different things about them, whether it be the therapy side of things. Yeah. I think that the way you just casually brought it up was quite nice to hear, because I think that's becoming more and more normal of like, oh yeah, on Fridays I go to therapy and, you know, speaking about mental health, speaking about social health and everything like that. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
And I think the last thing we'll ask you is what I ask every guest.
Okay.
And that is, what is gaming mean to you? What does gaming mean to you? Does not make sense. What does gaming mean to you?
I think gaming to me is a source of making friends. It's it's what I imagine a lot of people who like sports bond over, where they're like, ah, yes, I love football and I support this team. Oh my God, you love football and support team as well. Like we have a common interest. Gaming for me was that I didn't like sports growing up, but I liked video games. So then finding a community when I got older that also shared the same interests and the same things was a nice kind of bonding thing for me. So it's a very big social aspect for me for gaming.
Yeah, I think social aspect, beautiful. I think the people you meet through it has been an amazing experience, and we're just at the start of that journey.
Yeah.
We're going to be those 56-year-old people playing video games still, hopefully.
Hopefully, fingers crossed.
Yeah, thank you very much, Scott.
Thank you. Sports Social
Podcast Network. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.